Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here we go. Another season of Strictly Hoops with CJ Miles. You guys know the deal. Rate, review, and subscribe on all your platforms, YouTube, podcast, all that, my man.
All of it.
DJ.
Welcome back, my brother.
Welcome. And you know, a new season, a new guest, a very special guest on this episode to start us off.
Yeah, man. You know, it was only right. We had to get the best possible guest out there. And what better than somebody that can't talk?
Yeah. There is no better guest. A silent assassin, if you will. Exactly. Is what your son Isaiah is. For those listening, his son Isaiah Miles is joining us for a short period while some matters at home get figured out. I'll put it that way. Nothing bad.
Just like I am actually a dad first. That's just how this goes, right? Like, so
indeed,
we'll be good. And it's nothing he's never heard before. We talking about?
Nope. It's just hoops, and hoops.
Strictly Hoops.
With CJ Miles and Isaiah Miles. well, man, it's been a long off season. I mean, we did a few pods during the off season here and there. I got your expertise on Grady Dick. But now going forward, everyone, just so you're aware, we're going to be recording every single week during the season. So this is episode one of season two. But every Thursday is our hope is that we're going to be recording and releasing an episode. And that's the goal. That's what we're going to be doing. It's going to be more CJ talking about the Raptors because, hey, man, I see the views. I see the comments. You're all excited. I know you're all excited about this Raptor season and how things have been looking so far. But yeah, anyway, CJ, just your general thoughts on a new season and the vibe check, I suppose.
I mean, so to be fair, the vibe check in the beginning of the season, everybody passes it, right? It's the first day.
Of course.
It's ride of training camp. You're playing training camp in front of a hyped up crowd that doesn't get to see you that much. They're even hyper for it just being preseason, and guys are excited. But at the same time, as always, intriguing team, right? Still got a lot of the same type of pieces that you've always had. Project 6ix9ine is still very alive still too. And then you bring in some young guys. You bring in Grady Dick, obviously everybody's excited, as they should be. You bring in Dennis Schroeder at the one. Not to forget a brand new coach, new head coach that everybody seems to be very much in love with, which is a great start because that's the one thing that could not go well in the beginning because guys will know right away if they're going to mess with the coach or not, right? So that's the great thing about it. You hear everybody saying great things, and you just hope that they're not just saying that to start the season, right? Like, let's really we'll be able to see if they mean what they're saying.
Yeah. Are there signs from a player perspective if they're actually buying in or if they're saying just what they got to say very diplomatically?
No, I think the signs is like the effort that you get in the first preseason game, right? Like we were talking about it before we started. It's actually pretty good bump, like pretty good run, because we know a lot of first preseason games the starters played 6 minutes and then it's just whatever. Like, those guys played regular rotation in the first half, it looked like, and they got after it, you know? Like, guys are chasing people down, both sides, chasing people down on fast breaks, like, not just letting guys go. There's some good fouls. There's some good just intensity in that game, just guys really trying to get a feel.
Yeah. Today, Darko had said that he likes the idea of running a 10-man rotation. And to your point, that's what they were running in that first half mostly. It was 10 people. And then as the game went on, you know, obviously things changed and you bring in some of the other guys. But yeah, it was 10 players. And it's interesting that he's kind of decided that he wants to be 10 players. Like for some of those guys, and we've talked about it, and I mean, as Raptor fans, we're all aware too that, you know, last season the depth, we may have been a little bit confused about the depth on this team. It wasn't as clear as maybe we thought it might be, but this season going into it, it seems like there is like legit depth with this roster, and there's going to be talented players at the 11th, 12th, 13th roster spot that are not going to play. Dudes who should play on an NBA team, but they're not going to with this Raptor
squad. Great problem to have.
It is for definitely for a coach that, you know, a
couple reasons.
Yeah, injuries happen, so you have like that next man up mentality. That's for sure there.
Injuries, like you said, next man mentality, the quality of practice, the guys that those guys work against every other day, like, you know, iron sharpens iron, right? So having talented guys at the end of your bench that can push your guys every day and give those guys a sense of somebody could take my spot. I could lose my spot in the rotation if I'm not working and staying sharp. If you have a couple bad games, things like that, no. But, like, if I don't make sure I stay sharp, this is still very much a competition. This is still very much a win-first thing, right?
Yeah.
And the best players play. So whoever plays best plays, right? And that's a great thing about having a 10-man rotation and having 14 guys that can play, because everybody's pushed all the way up the ladder, right?
Mm-hmm. Some of the comments about Darko, that what's interesting is that a lot of them are very similar. You know, it's not just guys saying different parts about his character or who he is as a coach, is that everyone's kind of saying the exact same thing, which makes you believe that it's actually true, right? Yeah. Unless there's like a really good script out there that they've all memorized. They're actually, it seems like his practices are tough. They're tough, and that he's demanding. Those are things that Thad Young and Jalen McDaniels actually said today. It's kind of like in that realm, is that it's tough. He demands a lot, but also at the same time, he brings an energy that's very positive. The vibes are very good. He cares about you. He's a great communicator. These are all things we're hearing from players across the Raptors. Not one, not two. They're all saying the same damn thing, which makes me believe that, hey, you know what? Maybe this is actually true. And as you said, there was buy-in in that first game.
Yeah. One second. Lauren's about to take the baby.
Yeah. A transaction right in front of us. Call it a shovel pass. Is it a shovel pass, CJ? The point guard has taken the ball.
Yeah, the actual person that runs this team, right?
Exactly.
But yeah, so him hearing the word demand makes you think, like, if I come in and set my tone, then this doesn't feel like punishment. It doesn't feel like, because during the season, we all know, like, things can go up and down, and all of a sudden you want to throw all this stuff at us now because we're not winning. And then when we're winning, your practices are easier and they're doing this. But if you set a baseline right now of how we're going to work and what we want to do, then it's easier to ask for that demand. Like, when I get to the game, it's easy for me to ask you to do, because I'm at you every day about this. And I think that's a great thing to hear from them, and to hear that they're accepting it. Like, because we know people complain about the practices and the workloads now in this time. And that's what's great about having a 10-man rotation also. Now I got guys all through the year. I can keep guys fresher. I can keep guys sharp also for when I do need them in case an injury happens. And now I got to pull them up 15 minutes and I got to take somebody from that's not playing into the rotation. No, it's not so much slack from that. And I think it's great to hear.
Do you think that practices should be tougher than games? Do you back that?
I think with the way our schedule, obviously you have to be mindful of this, but I think you should train to make the game easy.
Yeah. Like, as a general point, obviously, like you can do it 3 games in 4 nights, maybe keep practice a little bit like coach, but
100%. But the day we have time to actually train and it does not affect us being able to get rest for a game, then 100% we should go at it.
Yeah.
We should get to it. We should scrimmage. And I'm not saying we play 4 quarters in practice, but I'm saying we should get some real intense. It's because intensity and focus of that level is a muscle, right? So we should train that muscle as much as we can. So by the time the end of the year comes and we're in the playoffs and you're really trying to keep people fresh, the muscles train so well that I'm not worried about us taking a whole day off between the games and series. I'm not worried about All-Star week, All-Star break. I'm not worried. You know what I mean? Because I've trained the muscle, and you get to a certain level where you want the muscle to keep its strength yourself. So when you go for All-Star Weekend, you're gonna work out because you know what I'm gonna demand when you get back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the great thing about setting that mental tone so early.
A few more things on Darko before we move on. But today, again, I said that Thad spoke, and he said someone asked him, I forget who it was, asked Thad, you know, within the coaches that you've had in your NBA career, how is Darko similar, different, and so forth? And he said, no, he's one of one. That's Thad Young saying that, who's seen a lot of damn coaches in his career. And he's saying he's one of one.
A lot of good coaches, too.
Yeah, that's revealing to me.
Yeah. No, and what I was saying to you lightly before we started, like the way they talk about him, it reminds me of the way I felt about Coach Vogel. Shout out to Coach Vogel going to Phoenix, which is crazy if he can get that type of love and buy in with the guys he's got over there too.
If they're playing like, defense, right? Oof.
Man, like if he can get that over there, but that's forget them. We're talking about the rest. because it also builds a confidence in the relationship, right? Like we were saying, like. The demand I create also comes with my ability to be able to create avenues for you to be a better player. So if I come to you and say we have a sit down one-on-one and I show you that I've studied your game and found ways to implement you in my game plan, when I ask you for something else, that's easy because I present it to you as easy. I've shown you five ways I can make you a better scorer, that can create you more minutes, create you better shots, opportunities. So then when I'm like, hey, I also need you to work on getting over screens better. I got you, coach. Of course I'll do that. Like that's, it's so, cause you
present, I'm here to help.
Exactly. Because I look at it easy. I don't look at it as a demand. I look at it as an exchange now. Like I look at it as we're exchanging something now. You gave me, you gave to give, so I give back.
Sure.
That's all it is.
Are there examples in your career that you've seen a new coach rejuvenate the same core of players? There's some changes, you know, around the edges with this Toronto Raptors team, but largely the rotation is going to be pretty similar to this past season. But has there been a time where you saw, maybe it's on your team, maybe it's on a different team, where you're just like, same damn players, but now they're a whole damn different team?
Yeah, because sometimes guys just need a new voice. Like sometimes it's not the coach's style of play or the way the plays he runs it's not that sometimes. Sometimes they just need to hear it a different way. And his voice doesn't match up with the crew of guys he's got. Or the voice gets old. Like the voice, and that happens. I hate to say it that way. The voice can get old. Like,
yeah, see, that's strange though. That's weird because you're paid to play basketball. You're paid to perform and to do all these things. You have incentive to perform very well. You know, like,
but this is the other thing. There's a part of that you have incentive to play well, and then there's almost as equal incentive not to be motivated all the time too when you sign the paper. And I don't have to sign another paper for 4 years. Or if I know I have 82 games, you're gonna let me do what I want. Like, you know, if I don't have that demand that we talked about on me, then I start to lose some of that. And that's not even on purpose. It's just from habit. If we do this all the time and every day, like. It's the same thing. That's a muscle too. Like, the only things that grow are things that you feed. So if you feed those habits and let me, oh, you don't got to practice today. We're going to get everybody except these two because I don't want to get them hurt. Or I'm shooting it well. I'm not going to get my shots today. You know what I mean? Like, you forget what you fed to shoot it well. So when you stop feeding it, it starts getting hungry. It gets weaker.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's kind of, you have to look at everything that way in terms of this. So like when we go back to that voice, if that voice isn't challenging me and feeding that demand, like if it gets to that point, then I get hungry. I lose strength, you know, like it's not really, I can't really, it's nobody's fault. It just happens sometimes.
Sure. Human nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I need to be challenged, like we all do.
Yeah.
And there's no, and the result is not happening. Like, it's not like we're winning championships every year. You know what I mean? Like, and that's every team. That's why stuff happens. Like, we need to, if this is continuing to take me where I want to go, that's different.
Yeah. My curiosity is now with Darko, like that I said today, that if the ball is moving in practice, Darko stops. He's like, okay. If it's sitting at points, they restart and they run it back or they reset. And I'm not sure if that's unique or not. Is that something that happens? And also, I wonder if that's going to be happening in January, because right now it's probably going to happen, right? Because you're putting your principles in, your foundation, yada yada. But is it going to be the same damn energy in December or something like that? Like, or you know, how does he navigate like the stuff inside of a season, because things do change, right? Players have up and downs in the moods. Right now, things are all great because it's a new season. But how does he navigate those other aspects in season is my question.
You keep the demand, because two things happen with a demand. You either get fed up and you find a way for it to stop happening, or you quit. So now I know who's with me. Now I know who bought in. If they got – I don't care if it works to the point where I made them so mad that they just do it right because they don't want to hear my voice. We still get the same effect. We still get it right. Like, you know what I mean? So – The goal is to get the best possible, not for me to be in charge. I don't care how it happens. Like, I don't, some guys might not need to say it 17 times. It might not. They might not have to get fed up with it because they naturally want to play that way. Some guys, we have habits we have to break. And the only way I can do that is to let you know as often as I can when it's happening until you start to notice it. And when you start to notice it, now I can stop talking and you don't have to hear my voice anymore. Like, you know, exactly. Like, and then you're able, when you start to notice it, it means you get to see the benefits of it because you noticed it. You didn't just do it because they told you. So when you start to notice it, you start to notice that because of the ball movement, you've been getting more open corner threes, or you've been getting backdoor cuts, or you've been able to get better screens on people in plays, or there's spacing when you have an ISO, or whatever the thing is. You notice it now because you're aware of why I'm telling you to do it.
No, it's true. We're going to find out, you know, the buy-in question pretty quickly, actually, because we're going to see who's actually in the rotation, who's not, and who stays in the rotation, who's consistently out of the rotation. It's going to reveal itself in some ways.
It always does.
It always does.
I don't got to tell Tom, I always do. I don't got to say it to you.
Yeah.
Your minutes to tell you.
I think everyone kind of knows that the offense looks very different now. Defensively, I mean, we're talking off air that we can look at some of the principles that Darko has mentioned, you know, limit corner threes, you want to protect the paint. The aggression obviously is going to be a little bit different with this Raptor team compared to last.
Yeah. And we all know, like, from just watching basketball, people that really watch it, like, you just name the things. Like, we're only playing one reasons game. We're going to stop the corner threes, stay in front of people. Like, we know the foundation of defense, right? So, like, it's literally going to live and breathe based off who we're playing and matchups. And so, like, it's in the preseason, everybody's just kind of, like, trying to do their base stuff and build, again, habits. So, the defense really isn't challenged that crazy except for one-on-one situations and being a help side.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no real – except for the rookies, there's no real IQ being challenged, not running their sets because they don't want to show you their sets yet. Like, and they haven't put the new ones in yet because they're just focusing on the first week of practice. So there's so much that is going to come, which is why we talked about full circle back to Darko creating that demand, because they're not being challenged right now defensively and for the ball to move because nobody's doing schemes on either side. So it's going to feel easy right now with you halfway doing it. But when we get to that stretch and we got to win these last 15 games for a higher playoff seed, then like I need that. I need something different. Like I need this to be already ready. Right.
Yeah. But on the offensive side, I mean, even though we may not be seeing like the final plays that we're going to be seeing probably on game one and also, you know, in game 40, but the principles of the offense are different this upcoming season. What are some of the things that you've noticed on what the foundation is and how they're pursuing offense?
I mean, obviously first, like the spacing and the things they're trying to do, right? And you notice because you watch guys that aren't predominantly three-point shooters moving into space like we teach shooters to move, which means they have an emphasis on we're going to take and make open threes and we're going to show you all the spaces that these plays open up threes. Even if you're not, even if you're not a guy – that's usually this guy that's doing the rise up. We talked about Scotty one of his first shots in the game was a rising up out of the corner three, like no hesitation, catching and shooting. Guy, he's not on him close, but he's not off him.
Yeah.
And we watched before, that's a play that he catches and he puts that on the floor, which means he's grown confidence in, and they put confidence in what they're doing, that if you got space, this got to go.
Yeah.
Like, this is the play that this creates. We got to make this shot. Same with him drifting to the corners. Same with OG coming off a handoff and shooting behind the handoff off a switch because he knows he's got space. Same with the driving kicks that get Dennis and Gary Trent threes. You see them just being prepared and being in their spaces and guys being aware where those guys are, because this is the right play. It's got to be made. I don't care if you can split the double team.
Yeah.
Save that for when I need you to be the guy that takes the shot at the end of the game.
Talking about Dennis right there. Guy goes to FIBA and is just like a closer gaming game out.
Yeah. So like, and we
now
know,
his role is different here.
Now the role is different, right? But then there's going to be a night that we're going to need to tap on that, because there might not be Pascal's night. And it's no shot at Pascal tonight. It's just not your night. It's not me saying that you're still not that guy. We just want the best chance to win. And right now he's got it going, or Scotty's got it going. Might be even OG. It might be even Gary Trent. It might be Grady Dick in the fourth quarter that came off the bench because of foul trouble and makes four threes in a row.
Hopefully, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, these are this is how the game goes. Like,
yeah.
This is the stuff that it might be Boucher. We know how he can have these spurts of taking over quarters. Like, there's plenty of guys that can do this.
Mm-hmm. How do you think they're using Yak differently so far this season?
I don't know if it's really different because of the way he plays. Like, I think there's opportunity, but I think they're just magnifying things that I thought he already did. I thought he already passed it well. I thought he was good up high with the ball and doing the things he does. I saw clips from practice, like he was shooting some mid-range jumpers, which means they want to get him, like, because space is still space. If he can create a little bit space that way, I think they're working on that. But I think it's just him being him, just with a greater emphasis on letting him do it and trusting him. Like, he makes some really good passes to guys along the baselines, and he's good in the handoffs. He's good at screening, and obviously in the pocket with the little push shot, like, and he rebounds. Like, that's the biggest thing he's going to have to do. Like, right? Like, if he controls that glass when he's in the game, everything else is icing on the cake. And we know how good the icing is already. So, like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, it would be great to see him be able to dominate on both sides some nights.
We're going to get back to Jakob in a second. Like, his role with this team has obviously been emphasized a little bit because of the dribble handoff system that I think we're going to be seeing from Darko's offense and how everyone works off of him. That was a part of the offense last season when he got there, but it wasn't, you know, the number one, number two option. They were just running a lot of different stuff, mainly, you know, pick and roll with Fred and Yak. But the transition game with this team, I think, is going to be really interesting, because I think last season transition was a point of emphasis, but it was mainly when they were able to gamble and create those steals. And then now they're out in transition, right? But now it feels like transition is going to be happening regardless, because of, you know, a miss happens, whoever gets the rebound, and it's like, it doesn't matter who's ahead of you. You pass the ball up and you keep on pushing the ball forward to get, you know, an easier offensive opportunity. Well, compared to probably last season, I think the ball was primarily going to certain players to ball handle across half court as they got closer to the basket. But now it's like, it doesn't matter who it is. And there's a double-edged sword to that. It's good, right? Because you're getting the ball up the court quickly, but at the same time, not everyone's ready for those reps, but that's going to be part of the development of this season. But the transition game for this team is going to be so damn important. Mm-hmm. So important.
And it's going to be really good too, because it's an emphasis, and they do the defensive things you're talking about that create. Yeah. There's a lot of plays in the first half of that preseason game where they're just poking the ball out, getting it out, and guys are getting out and getting layups and getting dunks, right? Dennis can push it. That first unit, you got essentially four guys that can push the ball, right? And there's so much room for them to be so fast. I think that has to be one of the things that they're looking at when they look at that roster, because they can switch on defense, they can do all these things, create havoc, do this, and those same guys are good straight line too. Like even Yach, you see Yach contest something at the rim and run the floor with.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Was it Dennis? One of the guards. Somebody was pushing.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
That was not moving slow. He got there for a tip-in.
He beat Sabonis. That's who it was.
He beat other guys down the floor for a tip-in early in that game. And that's something you look at, like, even him rim to rim after making the defensive play, that he's not the fastest guy on the floor. So, one is obviously effort, but the fact that he has the ability to do it lets you know we can do a lot of things.
Yeah. Deflections are going to be another point of emphasis, similar to last season too. But I think the deflections are going to be part of just like your, we are trying to be an aggressive defense to the extent that it's in our system, right? It's less about applying the ball pressure. It's more about containing, contesting, and just making smart reads. The reads on the team are going to be pretty pivotal. Not that it's not in like in other teams as well, but that's what they're going to be relying on. And that's what they're trying to get the players to be in tune with, that it's less thinking. It's more just you're reacting because you just know, you know, what your foundation is. 0.5 basketball. Let's start with that concept, 0.5 basketball. How does that present challenges for a team coming off of, you know, the offense that they had last season, which was not 0.5 basketball?
I mean, it takes the buy-in, right?
Yeah.
It just presents that, like, there's the habits are going to take over, especially when you have guys that are talented not playing at 0.5 basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, they can play and score, and they will win some games by not doing that. Does it help the grand scheme of things? No, because we look at totality. Playing that way does not get us what we actually want. So we do need to make a change. And that's where guys have to see it as a whole. Like, yeah, you're going to average 25, and we're still going to be a good team. But it doesn't get us over the hump. And at this point, getting over the hump is more important than anybody's numbers, because winning cures everything, right? Like, you see guys become all-stars, even with their numbers lower, when their teams are winning. And that's the focus you got to look at, right?
Yeah. Masking and decoy actions. I don't think we saw too much of that this past season. But I think that that's probably going to be one of, again, we talk about the principles, especially when they're going to be running some of their empty side stuff that I think we saw a little bit of it against the Kings. But what's interesting about the what we're seeing from Darko is that it's almost like the geometry of the court is what he's playing with, as opposed to like the whole offense. Sometimes he's running a lot of three-man game and you have, you know, corner shooters. And then other times, like, there's just, you got Scottie Barnes on one side, or it's Pascal Siakam, whoever it's going to be. And the side is cleared. And now they have these masking actions, these decoy actions, running at precise timing, precise times to just get the defense, you know, keep them guessing. How do you use those to create better? Or actually, what does it do for an offense to have those in place?
I think it's a great way to play, because it's a great way to add wrinkles to your plays, right? And it's a great way to allow reads to be made. So, like, let's just say the play is literally as simple as a side pick and roll with just Dennis and Pascal on the side. And we know this team likes to switch, so we're going to set it low and we're going to throw it back to Pascal so he can have a post and he have a mismatch and there's nobody over there. So now we know where the help's coming from. We got the shooters on the backside to make more space. And let's say we run it three times in a row. Pascal scores three times in a row. Let's say the play is called 22. That fifth time, that whole backside is going to shift over. And we run 22 snap, which is like, now Dennis comes out to pick and roll and everybody goes and screens for the shooter over there because everybody's come over and they're off his body. Then we can add another wrinkle where the pick and rolls, he comes off of Pascal. You could just start to add and play with the defense. And now that play becomes one long, like, exaggerated thought, right? Like, yeah. This happens, you do that. This happens, you do that. And the more and more thoughts, the more and more avenues we can grow, and the more and more defenses try to mess it up, it just creates another avenue for us to explore. So a lot of plays will grow just off the defense. I won't even have to put those in. Yeah. We'll get to a point where I can call one play and there's 30 reads out of it.
Sure.
Just because they've learned the base of this so well that they just look at what the defense is doing. And I think that's why playing the geometry works so well, because guys have to pick. You have to pick and choose. If you're just going to play one-on-one basketball, we don't have to pick and choose.
Is it easier? Is it easier for those kinds of like secondary, tertiary actions to happen off of a dribble handoff system? Because I think we know some of the limitations to a degree of pick and roll. If you have a great high pick and roll, I mean, awesome. Not everyone does. But with a dribble handoff system, it just seems like you have so many more options within that kind of style as compared to, because it involves more players.
And it's because we don't play around on dribble handoffs. The pick and roll, the ball handler's like, trying to figure out his angle, might have to rescreen him. The dribble handoff's happening.
Yeah.
And it's got to happen fast. Because if it happens slow, they're going to blow it up and you can't even hand the ball. So it's got to happen with a pace, and everything with pace makes everybody react.
Hmm.
Like, that's just what pace does. That's why you watch, you can't figure out why Stephen Curry's always open. The greatest shooter of all time. How does he get open shots? Do you see the pace that man plays with? He's the most,
Sanity.
Maybe the most well-conditioned player of all time.
Yeah.
Like, it's between, him and LeBron probably, right? And then we can go, obviously, AC Green. Like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, he's got to say his name. I'm sorry. But when we think about that, the pace that Steph plays with creates everything, even with you knowing everything about him and what you don't want from him. So if we can do anything with pace, it makes people speed up. My pace makes the defense speed up, which leads to mistakes. Until you meet the veteran teams that communicate well. Most teams don't communicate well.
Yeah. But even then, like, that's where these secondary, when you're able to have like these different layers to to an action, that's where it comes in, is that they may know your first three options, but if you have a few more off of that as well, this is where the buy-in comes from. You need players to be able to make those reads on the fly, but that's where, you know, having an offense that involves so many players, incorporates so many players, and helps everyone feel involved in it. That's what makes it better.
Because my word today is demand, because we've been using it, right?
Demand.
Demand eventually causes a break. That's the way you got to look at it from the offensive side. So, like, say this team is a good defensive team and we come off with pace on the first side and they're able to guard it because they're a good defensive team. We come off with pace on the second side. They're able to guard it. If I keep every action within this wrinkle until I get to the wrinkle with pace, they're going to give me something. The demand will cause a break somewhere. And even if it doesn't on this possession, it will cause it three possessions from now.
Mm-hmm.
Can't let that discourage you, right? Like, and that's the way you have to see it. And that's the beauty of having 10 players in a rotation also, because I can always have demand. Can always. As soon as you're not making, you're not giving demand, making a demand on the floor, I can put somebody else in that can. And then I can put you back when you're rested.
Yeah.
And you have to look at, that has to be what he's thinking, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
what his goal is to have 10 guys that create demand.
Yeah. Cutting was a problem, and also, again, something that they focused on last year. And it may not have been, the product may not have been what they wanted it to be, but it seems like, again, with Darko now, that cutting is going to be something that they just need to be precise.
Mm-hmm.
When a coach approaches a player about, or a team actually, about their cutting, is it, these are the ways in which you cut? Like, are these are the certain ways which we want to get offense off of cutting? Or is it like, we need, these are like the 7-10 different ways that, in which you could cut, and we want you to do all of them depending on the moment? Like, is it like we try to do 3-4 different types of cuts? Because there's so many, right? Go on.
I think it's just understanding when and where you are, right, within what we do, and understanding what the cut will do. Like, you want the cut to be able to have an end result that's more than just you getting a layup. Like, if I make this cut and I can't get it to you, it's because it created something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to, and emphasizing how locked in you have to be, because the timing of your cut will mess with our pace, which is what we want. So if you're not locked into what's going on and you cut late or you cut early, then you take away or create a bad situation. You can take away a good situation or create a bad situation, because somebody either has to stop and hold it, then the defense has a chance to get set, or you're too early and you run into somebody and now we're clogged, the spacing's bad, whatever it is. It's about really being able to just see what we're doing. That's what the cut, that's what makes the cut so important, because guys, you see guys cut all the time and nothing comes out of them. Like empty cuts is what you would call them.
Yesterday,
you see a guy, you see a guy backdoor cut when he's on the empty side. And nobody, you know what I mean? Like, and the big's bringing him the ball, and he doesn't get open because the timing's bad. And now the big standing over there with the ball. Sorry, that popped in my head last second.
No, it's true. It's true though, right? And like, and I saw Pascal working on some of that stuff in Burnaby too. Is that like he's faking towards, you know, taking the dribble hand off, but then he's cutting back door. And it's little things like that. But I saw that there is a, it looks like a 4-point line on the Raptors practice court. And Aaron Rose of SI asked Darko about it, and he said that it's not a 4-point line. It's where they want their offense to start. Like that's where they want, that's the kind of spacing that they're looking for. Is that rare? Have you ever seen them before?
Yes, not the line though. So like there used to be X's on the floor.
Yeah.
And that would be the spaces for guys, like where they wanted them at. There'd be one in the corner. There'd be one higher on the wing. There'd be one, you know what I mean? They put it in the spots where it would create so much more space in our offense. Mm-hmm. And the more space that we can create, like the more room the defense has to cover. Yes. And that's what you want. You want them spaced out and have to cover a lot of ground. And covering ground is hard when you're always one step behind, right? Because they can't react till I move. Yeah. So that's why you want space. But yeah, no, it's a great tactic though. Like, and then if you have guys that can make shots from there and can train to make shots consistently, now you create so much space for the ball handlers. Because now the help has to come so far downhill and so far back out that if the passes are on the money, they can get guys good shots.
What were your thoughts on, again, early days, but what were your thoughts on Dennis as a starting point guard in game one?
I thought it was Dennis. Like, I always liked him. You know what I mean? Like, my favorite thing from the game is Scotty tries to throw a full court bounce pass and it gets
that was crazy.
And it gets stolen, right? And then there's like a foul or something, and Dennis picks the ball up and looks at him. It's like, come on. And I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's an easy thing we can laugh about in the first preseason game.
Yeah.
But like, he's like, no, the focus is we're going to take care of this ball. And he doesn't like hound him. He doesn't do anything to embarrass him. He just says, come on, which also insinuates you know better. I don't have to tell you what you did. So I'm really encouraging you. Like, come on, do what I know. Be who you are.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like the greatest thing, especially for first year there, first year with a guy, first preseason game, early in the year, game don't count. It's a fun night, you know, we're in another part of Canada, like all these things that could allow you to let that go. And he's like, nah, which lets you know that winning from the summer is bleeding into like his men, you know, where he's at right now. He just came off a tremendous run. And I think that pedigree, he's bringing it with him. You can't turn that off.
Mm-hmm.
But he was great.
Yeah. No, like everything we've heard from him is that it seems like him and Darko are like yin and yang almost.
Is that
their attention to detail, the intensity that they roll with, and accountability. I mean, like Dennis is saying the exact same things that Darko is saying almost. And I don't think there's a script out there. I just think they're that similar.
But that's what you want, right? You want a guy to do that. Like, and that's like the funny thing about like the way we describe the point guard now, like, because they was like they're like the pure point guard is gone. You know, they say that, right? And the point guard's job is to be an extension of the coach on the floor, like the game plan. So if my coach is, if I'm a scoring point guard and our game plan is for me to score, I'm still a pure point guard as long as I'm doing what the coach told me to do.
Yeah.
If I'm a great defensive point guard, pass point point guard, and our offense is set up for me to be that, I'm an extension of the coach by doing what he tells me to do. Doesn't the pure point guard is not gone. It's just the game plan is played to the strengths of the players. Yeah. And I hate that we have this mentality of point guards pass, shooting guard shoots, small forward should be 6'7", this, that, and like you, and you see the game getting rid of it, obviously, but we still have these locked in mentalities, and we'll create this narrative on guards and players off of that though. And it's unfair. And it happens even in staffs and coaching staffs too. Like, we want this player to be this.
Yeah.
But that's not what he is. And you drafted him because of what he is. We talked about this with who did we talk about last year that we thought? The young kid that we really liked that was in the G League. He's in training camp this year. Yes. He's got to be him. Same with Malachi Flynn. Those guys either find a way for them to be themselves to help. And obviously there's some things you have to work on if it's defense, things like that. But like, insinuate their strengths. And if you can't, then don't put them in positions to not help you or themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a fun year. Interesting year. You mentioned Malachi Flynn. I think there's a ton of incentive for the Toronto Raptors to also see, like, how does he look as a backup point guard, whatever that actually means within the Raptors, because Scotty, I think, is also going to play some point guard. But anyways, like, I think Malachi is one of those dudes that huge year for him. We got to see if Jeff Dowden Jr. makes the team, because his contract gets guaranteed if he makes the opening night roster. Oh. So there's some few things that are still up in the air, obviously.
He did it once. He can do it again.
Well, he's going to have to. So hopefully for his sake, we'll have to see how it goes. 100%. It's like way, way too early to be probably doing this, but I just want to hear your take on this is that you look at this roster, you look at game one, you look at what they're saying. What's up?
1 second before we go there, I got to give a shout out to McDaniels. We talked about him before.
Yes.
Really good minutes. Really liked what I saw from him watching the game. He's got a lot of potential to like help this team as a combo guard, wing, whatever you want to play him as. He's got a lot of talent. So I didn't want to get away from not throwing that out there because I think it's something to watch.
He makes really good defensive reads.
Mm-hmm. Good really hands, good length. Yeah. And like you said, there's some stuff offensively I think is there that you just kind of, you can see the potential of that he hasn't had a chance to figure out yet. And I think it's a little different than everybody else. Like, just his athleticism is going to allow him to make some plays that some of the other guys can't make.
Exactly.
Like the way he moves, the way he's able to move. Like, it's not better or worse. It's just like he moves differently.
It's explosive, but
it's still controlled. It's smooth, and he has the length with it. Like, he can move sideways. He can move. You know what I mean? Like, some guys don't have all planes. Some guys are good straight. Some guys' hips are a little tighter, so they're kind of boxy with their handle. Like, you know, like Pascal's handle is different than Scotty's, and OG's handle is different than Gary. You see the difference in movements of their body styles. He has a very fluid athleticism.
A perfect fit for a dribble handoff system. Like, he's a seamless fit. I was doing comparisons between, you know, him and Chris Boucher, but physically, the athleticism they have, like their body structures, their play style is very different. And I think he could be really good for the Toronto Raptors this upcoming season.
He'd be really good.
Yeah. But factoring factoring what we've discussed, what you've seen, do you have a bit more confidence about this roster, what they're capable of after, you know, the past month or so than you had previously? Like, our last conversation, put it that way. Do you have more conversation, more and more conversation? Do you have more confidence in this team from our last, from previous? Oh my gosh, I'm struggling through this here. Okay. I'm going to get this out. Do you have more confidence in this Toronto Raptors team now than you had in our last conversation in July? I did it.
Yes, but it's not. But I only say that because I can't say no. But I never only had.
You can say no. Of course you can.
No, I only ever had one question though. So My only question was shooting. Like everything else, everything I saw, like I thought I would see. I never thought they would be bad or would be like, I thought they would be good. And then I got the surprise from McDaniels, and I got to see how they want to move offensively. So it makes me more confident, yes, but I still have the question of shooting. Yeah. Not that there aren't guys that can make shots on that team, but like, are those guys ready to play? Like, is Grady Dick ready to play?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they think he's ready to play? Yeah. That's the question. Like, because I know Grady's ready to play. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so, like, I should say, do they think he's ready to play? Yeah. Or are they going to just rely on Gary Trent to carry the load? Is Scotty Barnes going to shoot mid-30s from three this year and close to 40 on the open catch and shoot? That's what I care about. I don't care about the overall percentage over the year. I care about the ones that he has to make. I care about the routine ones that come out of the flow of the offense, the easy catch and shoots. Because one of the things I wrote in my notes about the game was there's a habit they do have to break. In the clock, too many guys shot step backs. And I know it's early in the year, but break that habit. Attack and think San Antonio. San Antonio, for the longest time, was leading the league in like the amount of time left on the clock when they took a shot. Like they used that. If it was 6 seconds, that guy drove. He didn't think, let me find a move in my bag and sidestep this. He drove it. And you know, guys don't want to foul end of clock. So you're either going to get to the rim and get a chance at the rim, or the help's going to come because they let you get by and you create a shot. That's a rhythm shot more so than having to do the 2K shot.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. Like, that's why I say I care about him making the shots within the offense and not his totality of his percentage.
Yeah. Their anticipation as a team and how they collectively react is going to be really important. Like I talked to a few people about this during the offseason, but as we learn more about, you know, what is their offense and what are the principles, it's going to be less about, you know, the plays. It's going to be how they react off of those plays because everyone, you know, teams watch film, they're going to know your first action. They're going to know your second one. All right. But how do you keep on making offense happen in the last 10 seconds of the shot clock to what you're talking about?
Yeah. That's what it is, right? Like, it's just growing, reacting, being able to learn from what we're doing, holding each other accountable as we do that. And everything comes right.
We're wrapping up the podcast now. Do you want to bring Isaiah back to say bye or no?
Nah, they're on the other side of the house. They're in this room.
Okay. Well,
because this room, I do everything in this room. So I'm like over by the garage so I can play music at night and do all the stuff that I do.
Smart. Yeah. You claimed that room early on.
We came to see the house, walkthrough. I was like, oh, this is mine. I was like, you can have everything else. Do not plan on anything right here. Just do everything. I said that day one.
Good for you.
I said it in the pictures on Zillow when I saw the house.
You saw the blueprints.
Yeah. And I was like, yo, yeah, leave it alone.
Planning is important for the Raptors, and also planning is important for CJ Miles.
We wouldn't be here.
100%. Everyone, episode one of season two is in the books.
Yeah.
We will be back next week.
Next week.
Next Thursday. We'll have a few more games to look at. The Raptors play on Sunday, and they play on Tuesday. And then they'll be wrapping up their preseason next Friday. And then it's showtime, baby. But yeah, CJ, thank you, sir. Closing thoughts, closing words.
Let's get ready, man. You know, like let's have fun. Hopefully these guys keep doing what they're doing with their buy-in. But like I was about to say, I also like the first game and having that break between the game. I like them giving the team that, because then they have something against somebody else they can take in and use it. It used to be like you get to the first game and they're off to the races. Like the season starts, you play 3-4 games in a row, you get a couple of days before the opening night, and then it's off. Like I like that they did this the way of scheduling that. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I'm just excited to be here, as always.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Excited to be here. We couldn't wrap on the schedule, on a word about scheduling. So that's good that you said that. Okay, everyone, thank you so much. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon.
Press every button.
Yep.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.